Calling all benders and non-benders alike, dive into the epic world of Avatar with your favorite podcast, Avatar, Braving the Elements.
Hosted by me, Janet Varney, the voice of Avatar Korra.
And me, Dante Bosco, the voice of Prince Zuko.
Each week, we'll explore a new episode of The Legend of Korra.
Find your balance as we uncover breaking news, trivia, special guests, and so much more.
I mean, I've got some flameo hot takes that'll really light a spark. Follow and listen to Avatar Braving the Elements on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back, folks. We are joined by Michael Heck, president and CEO of GNO Inc., who is managing the program yet again, but a nice, friendly reminder that the Saints are starting their season this Sunday at 3:05 kickoff against the San Diego Chargers. It's here, Michael.
Yeah, no, it's here. And, man, you know, I'm playing that song. I hate to say it. As I'm always a bit emotional coming on this show just because of the weight of it all. But that does bring me back to that game on September 25th, 2006, when you two played that and Steve Gleason blocked the punt, and we were all crying, and not just because we beat Atlanta, but I think that we knew in that moment that the Saints were going to come back and they were going to be better than ever, and by metaphorical extension, so was New Orleans. I mean, that was a surreal and magical time for all of us who were there and remember it.
There were definitely defining moments in the aftermath of the storm, you know, on this long timeline. And unfortunately, and we'll talk about this in a second, but, you know, we're still trying to recover in some respects. But and you remember each and every one of them. And we're actually going to spend a lot of time this month talking about that. And we will be doing a live production with the lieutenant governor at Great. The exhibit for the 20-year anniversary of Katrina, where a lot of folks that were down here from other areas of the country talking with them, their perspectives, you know, and kind of talking about those events along that timeline that you knew the place that you call home was going to, you know, recreate, re-engineer itself and survive. And it was kind of a strange feeling for a lot of us. And, you know, those of us in law enforcement, we were in the midst of it from the very beginning and it never stopped. And, you know, and it was interesting, to say the least.
Yeah, no, it seems like yesterday and a lifetime ago, which I know is cliche, but it's absolutely true. It was a generation ago. It was 20 years ago. So it was a long time, but there's no question that you can still see the physical and still feel the emotional scars from Katrina and the aftermath.
And speaking of scars, I'm told you're a big Red Dress Run guy. You're going to be in a red dress this weekend. Is that true?
that may or may not be true. Although, you know, the wife is going out of town, so cats away. I might have to go down to the CVS and get, what do they call those razors, like the Lady Silks or whatever, and yeah, you know, do a little manscaping, get ready. I don't know. I haven't done the Red Dress Run in a while. You know, I think I was actually probably banned from it for aesthetic reasons.
Yeah. You know, there's a lot going on. I mean, in the city, they got Red Dress Run. We had the U.S. gymnastics competition in the arena. Dirty Linen Night Saturday. There's no shortage of things to do this weekend, for sure.
No, we're doing a good job. I'm sorry to interrupt, but there was a survey that Walt and New Orleans and Company did that had this really surprising result. The months that the most people, the highest percentage of people wanted to come see New Orleans was actually, I think, July. And, you know, we think, how is that possible? Because the place is just suffocating in terms of heat, humidity. But that's when people are on vacation. And so they're going to travel. And so it shows that if we do program these things, folks will come and they'll spend money and they'll support our restaurants. I think our seasonality over time, it's always going to be an issue, but I think we can flatten it out a lot.
Absolutely. No doubt. Let's get started on these topics that we want to talk about today. Dome Sweet Dome, 50th birthday of the Superdome. Absolutely incredible.
It's incredible. We know how iconic it is. I'm looking at it right now. It still looks beautiful today. It's been an incredibly smart investment. I mean, we just spent $500 million making it into a modern stadium. That compares to, you know, the billions, the 2 to 5. I think the one, the SoFi in California was $6 billion that they cost. So it's been smart. But I think the thing to reflect on this, and somebody wrote this, it might have been Jeff Duncan, but when this was being debated and when John McKesson was talking about it, it was hugely controversial. It was seen as way too costly. But it got done. And I almost feel about it the same way that I feel about us landing on the moon. You know, when we talk about defining moments of the future, a lot of times it feels like we're reaching back 50 plus years. And I look at the dome and I think, man, we need to recapture that spirit of being radically future oriented and taking risks, calculated smart risks, and betting on ourselves. That's what the dome was. And it's impossible to imagine this city without it. But at the time, plopping down, you know, this massive saucer, the biggest fixed dome structure in the world, I can't even imagine what they must have said to Dixon and McKesson and the rest of them. They must have thought they were completely mad. But now we can't imagine life without it. So I hope we take that lesson from the Superdome as well.
Well, you know, one of the most overused words in the English language might be the word transformational, but I don't know of a word that describes this any better. I mean, you took a rail yard, right, in downtown New Orleans that was underutilized at the time and just, you know, redefined that whole area and created a corridor that I don't think anybody ever expected would be a byproduct of the dome being located inner city. You know, and as you look back now, there are not many inner city stadiums, right? They're very few.
It's absolutely our competitive advantage. And when you talk to, you know, Roger Goodell, he'll say, this is why they love having the Super Bowl here, because it's less expensive, it's more lively, it's less complicated. I mean, the game they're going to have this year in you know, air quotes, San Francisco, is down in Santa Clara. It can be literally 2 hours by car to get to the stadium. So, you know, right now I'm looking on my window, Newell, at at Charity. And if we can apply the same type of real future thinking to the Charity and to our healthcare district, then, yeah, in 20 years, we can see a transformation there as well. If we look at what we're doing down at the NSA on Poland Avenue with this new lab facility we're putting in, who's already been in Detroit and New York City, that could be transformational. The River District, you know, should absolutely be transformational to that area. So I just, sometimes I think, Newell, our greatest poverty is a poverty of imagination. And I find the Superdome inspiring, but also a little bit bittersweet in that context.
No doubt, for sure. Michael, the other day you moderated a panel with the top four mayoral hopefuls at UNO. Your thoughts?
It was a good panel. We had a good time. You know, you never know how these panels are going to go and whether they're going to be stilted and boring or whether they're going to be lively and informative. And I personally, and I've talked to a lot of people afterwards, came away feeling pretty good. It was sponsored by NOMAR, a Realtors Association, and some of our building associations. So it was focused on real estate and affordable housing. And honestly, I thought that all four of the candidates really comported themselves well. There was a lot of energy. There was a lot of thoughtfulness in the response. And I think what was most interesting, and this is not just a New Orleans thing, this is obviously a national thing, there was a palpable level of respect and civility between all four of them. And I think everybody just enjoyed that they were spent the time addressing the issues and not in ad hominem or side attacks on each other, which is kind of what we've come to expect you know, in these debate forums. So I walked away feeling good about the transition that's coming up. And I was talking to a reporter yesterday, and she said, man, people seem to be, you know, talking about all the issues in the town more, and I don't understand it because crime is getting so much better. You know, why are people so worked up? And I said, I think it's because they sense an opportunity, and they know that this is a chance for us to turn a page, not only in terms of strategy and tactics, but also in tone. And I just think people are ready for that here.
Yeah, you know, I just did a monologue, Michael, on the records retention story that was done, you know, relative to the clerk's records being sent to a landfill by the Public Works Office. And, you know, the point I was making, and that's bad enough, but in the article, the Public Works Director, Rick Hathaway, reveals that they're still working out of FEMA trailers, and they've never rebuilt their actual offices since Katrina, 20 years later. And I said, you know, it's these little tidbits like this that we, I wonder where our priorities have been. You know, we have our mayor flying all over the world, going to every climate conference that exists out there, but yet
in a jet.
we haven't yet rebuilt the facility to house the public works employees, and at the same time we're confused or perplexed by why we can't hire anybody.
Yeah, it's, I mean, you know, every candidate that's asked me, and I've talked to all of them, and they say, you know, what should we be doing in terms of economic development? And they've said, oh, do we need new training programs? Do we need money for startups? I said, no. But before we get to any of that stuff, we just need a city that's clean, safe, and efficient. If you focus on clean, safe, and efficient, both within the city hall and outside in our streets, everything else will take care of itself. Change starts at home. Make your bed, bring your dishes down. It's a weird thing, Newell, because, and I also saw this from the time that I spent in the Super Bowl working with a lot of great people in City Hall. You know, Joe Threat, Gilbert Montagno, guys like Rick. And you see that on one hand, the range of what needs to be fixed is overwhelming because it's everything. Yeah, still working out of FEMA trailers 20 years later is unfathomable. But on the other hand, it's all very doable. Like none of these challenges are cold fusion. They're just about showing up and working the punch list every day. And so I think that if we get a mayor who brings that type of pedantic approach and really, really importantly, surrounds him or herself with excellent, you know, Class A people, we can see a real difference in this city in a relative short period of time, in, you know, under 2 years.
You know, this observation is going to sound a little picayune-ish, but I don't think it is. I desire a mayor that goes to less ribbon cuttings and delivers less speeches and goes to less places and has more meetings in her office or in his office about the low-hanging fruit, you know, these types of things, records retention, rebuilding these buildings, getting them done, you know, pushing the edges of the envelope of your staff and getting through, as you said, the punch item list, you know. The punch list items, I mean, and get them done, you know, just and I love that the way you put it, because everything else will take care of itself, because business and all other folks will leverage safe, clean, efficient government. They know how to leverage that. The cities that have redefined themselves and re-engineered themselves, they've done it.
The definition of economic development that we use is creating the conditions where businesses want to invest and people want to live, period. That's it. No secret. And a sister city agreement made my life better, said no one ever, except the person signing the agreement.
But we had, what, three trips for the sister city, you know, agreement? So what?
I mean, we got a big family. We got a big family. Yeah. Big family. Big family. Lots of Christmas.
If you can't email it and you still got fax machines, just fax it. I mean, we don't need to go over there.
I'm feeling good about the attitude, good about the tone, and you know, and I think that the citizens of New Orleans and the region are ready to get behind this. The energy is there. They've had a taste of success through things like the Super Bowl, and they're just hungry for more. And they know, for example, with the crime situation, that change is possible, even difficult change. Is possible. So, you know, sun is shining. I'm on my third coffee, but I'm feeling pretty good.
So, I think you've had an opportunity, and there's been some interviews with the head of the University of New Orleans, Kathy Johnson, who's the president there. Seems as though they're feeling good about this new relationship with LSU Baton Rouge.
I agree. I talked to President Johnson yesterday. One, I think that she's great. She's solid. She's thoughtful. She has experience with schools like this. And, you know, the reality is that the experiment of UNO going with the UL system hasn't worked. The school has been struggling since Katrina, despite being so very important, having some excellent programs. And it just really needed almost like a bankruptcy type cleanup, because the core underlying business and the logic is still there, but the balance sheet was a mess, and it just needs to be cleaned up and refocused. And so we're at a position now where the balance sheet is getting cleaned up, so there's going to be breathing room financially, which is so important. I assume coming out of this, there's going to be a new brand and a new logo, and I've been pushing for that for years, because I said, guys, UNO is just a card game or like a pizza shop from the 80s. Like, it's not, this doesn't mean anything to anybody outside of New Orleans, whereas New Orleans is one of the most recognizable civic names in the world. What are we doing? I was talking to one president once, who shall go nameless, and we're in his office. And he's complaining to me about, Michael, enrollment keeps going down. We don't have enough international students. I don't know what to do. And over his shoulder, and you'll remember this, Neil, you know I'm not making this up, good storyteller, bad liar, there was a poster that said, UNO, New Orleans' best kept secret. And I was like, Mr. President, mm-hmm. I think I know your problem.
Yeah. It's staring you in the face every day.
Oh, man, if it was a snake, you'd be dead. And right. So I think the thing that's interesting to talk about this is I've had a few people mention to me, they said, you know, one of the most successful schools in Louisiana is La Tech. But La Tech is way up there in Ruston. With all the things that UNO has been so good at historically, with the architecture and the engineering and the tech focus, and then with the state going in that direction, the world going in that direction, maybe UNO should focus much more going forward on STEM, on tech, and really become, you know, become the school that's known for that in this part of the state. And I don't know. I think that's interesting about whether focusing more is also can be an outcome of this process.
How much of an impact? I mean, you know, this city had over 600,000 folks at one time. You know, and we're struggling mm-hmm. to get to 400,000. Our out-migration and the income levels are still greater than the income levels of our in-migration, and that continues to be a challenge. How much of that do you think is contributing to their difficulties? Because we have a lot of universities here. I mean,
we're overdone. I mean, we've got 13 universities in our region.
Yeah.
And I love them. I mean, they're all amazing, but we've got a problem that a lot of legacy cities have, right? In that we've got this infrastructure, which includes physical infrastructure, but also institutional infrastructure that was created for a time, when the city had, you know, close to 700,000 people, many of whom were going to UNO, and we're not that city right now. And so that creates this, this overhead problem, because you're servicing this infrastructure without the revenue. because you don't have the volume coming in. So there's a right-sizing thing that has to happen here. And sometimes, you know, sometimes you have to kind of consolidate or shrink in order to start growing again. You just have to kind of right-size. And yep. Maybe this is one of those moments.
Absolutely. All right, we'll be right back. We're visiting with Michael Heck, President and CEO of G&O Inc. We'll be right back, folks. Stay with us.
Calling all benders and non-benders alike. Dive into the epic world of Avatar with your favorite podcast, Avatar, Braving the Elements.
Hosted by me, Janet Varney, the voice of Avatar Korra.
And me, Dante Bosco, the voice of Prince Zuko.
Each week, we'll explore a new episode of The Legend of Korra.
Find your balance as we uncover breaking news, trivia, special guests, and so much more.
I mean, I've got some flameo hot takes that'll really light a spark. Follow and listen to Avatar Braving the Elements on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back, folks. We're visiting with Michael Heck, President and CEO of G&O Inc. And Michael, we have some special guests joining us.
Yeah, thank you. You can tell Chris, good job with that intro music there, appropriate. I was too busy texting to prompt. So this this is great. We're going to be talking about the River District, I think one of the most exciting projects in the country, with two of the partners, Michael Meredith and Todd James. And they're going to be talking about the new Phase 1 apartments that are going in, which are affordable housing, which is great for the city. So it's great to have them on talk about the most exciting new neighborhood in America.
So let us just start with, this is 39 acres of previously vacant land. I didn't realize it was that large of a plot of property. Michael and Todd, welcome to the show.
Glad to be here.
Thanks.
So Michael, if you would give us a little flavor of what is actually going on at the present time relative to this project.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, we won this RFP a while back, and our team has, since that day and before, they've been hard at work. And, you know, we've looked at building a new neighborhood, right? We're expecting to, you know, here generate, you know, close to $43 million in new net tax revenue. And this is a $1 billion project, right? And we're just at the precipice of that. And so, you know, if you drive by the site, you'll see a ton of infrastructure work going on, new streets, new state-of-the-art stormwater management, as well as, you know, some vertical, you know, pilings that are going on at the brand new Shell building. And that's just the beginning. We've got housing coming, entertainment coming, cultural experiences. And so, you know, we're super excited about this new neighborhood.
So how far along, I mean, obviously to support this, because this is talked about as being a mixed use project, so it's going to be very diverse. You have a lot of different types of structures that will be constructed out there. How far along are y'all relative to this infrastructure development?
Yeah, so hey, Noah's Todd. We've started to advance the ball pretty far along. We're pretty much at now the 40% completion part with this infrastructure, as Michael alluded to with the stormwater management system. That was one of those key elements we really needed to get installed for the site first. And this is one of those unique setups where we're actually storing 100% of the stormwater runoff for the entire development between Chapultepec to the river. So, unfortunately, we did have some setbacks with the river being up for some time. We lost roughly about 75 days of work, but we're back on track to keep that going so we can at least have this first phase of infrastructure complete in June of next year.
Todd, if you would, explain to my listening audience, because a lot of people have no idea how ticklish of a situation it is when you're constructing close to the river, because there's a bunch of rules.
Oh, yeah. So one of the key regulatory entities we have to continue to work with, is with the levee district and the Corps of Engineers. And whenever that flood gauge gets above 12 feet at the Carrollton gauge location, in order for them to protect any type of underground water coming back up and having a hydrostatic issue where water pressure may push against us, digging holes in the ground, we have to pause and make sure that we're putting all of the correct testing protocols in place so that we could keep the work going, but also not creating a further impact and, let's say, flooding the city, for lack of a better term.
Yeah, so when y'all hear about that water coming down the river, it's like, this is not a good thing, guys, right? I mean, it's like,
you know,
construction is challenging enough. And then when you have these additional challenges on top of it, it makes it a little hairy for sure.
Definitely, definitely. But it's one thing, really appreciative of everyone that we have in place, Bow Brothers handling the lion's share of our infrastructure work, my team on the Broadmoor side handling the shell vertical construction piece. It sets up a pretty good synergy for us to keep a lot of these things in order.
So, Todd, one of the things that people are always talking about with the new improvements there on Chapultepec Street that are coming about and Convention Center Boulevard is traffic. And I know that you guys have been all over this. Where are y'all relative to those plans?
So with the traffic improvement plan, remember, like I mentioned, we're in this first part of phasing for infrastructure. Now, part two really gets into the traffic management process. So we've been working over the past 3 years with our consultants with a heavy focus on how we manage the existing traffic that's coming out of the port or anyone who's leaving uptown going home. Leaving uptown going to work in the morning or on their ride back in home from the evening at work. So one thing we're looking at right now is how to help mitigate the one biggest point of impact is that left turn. If you ever want Chapultepec in the evening and you hear the J brakes on the trucks rolling, one of the biggest issues has always been how do we get traffic back onto the interstate and not cause any further stacking into the site. So we have a couple things that's in play with some potential road movement, road location changes, and how that movement will be able to flow better around the site and even through the development.
Will that require changing the direction of traffic flow on some of the flat streets or?
So actually, that's what's been a benefit. We did study one concept of changing traffic flow on one of the surface streets, but that's still something we have to work through with DOTD and Public Works to confirm if that's going to be the best option going forward. So we're looking forward over the next 9 to 12 months, resolving that bigger picture plan and getting something rolling and approved with the state.
So I think when we talk about vertical construction, the first building that we anticipate to see coming up out of the ground is the Shell building, right?
Correct. Yeah, and that building is actually under construction right now. If you actually take an opportunity to go ride down Convention Center Boulevard, and when you get to Henderson, you'll see some of our construction signs up, and the first signs of vertical columns are now there. So you'll see quite a bit of traction on that piece with a projected target date of that project getting closer to completion in mid to late 27.
And then obviously there'll be other aspects that'll be under construction at the same time. I think there's a residential portion. Tell us about that.
Yeah, I'm going to hand that over to Michael.
Yeah, it can happen.
Yeah, Mike.
Yeah, hop in there. You know, we're anticipating a start in Q2 of a 220 unit, mixed income development, and we're proud and want it. We're bringing diverse housing to the site where the folks that work at the convention center can stay. Our policemen, our firefighters, our teachers can stay, and also market rate units as well, and that. Is looking, to be delivered and ready to lease in 2027, and super proud of the team we put together there, with Traplin Pierce, our architect, and Gensler and Studio Kuro, and delivering a high design, very high quality building, there in the River District.
What is it going to be called? I saw it the other day.
It's going to be called the Ravana.
The Ravana. Okay. All right. Yeah. I knew it was something close to that. There's been a lot of back and forth on Topgolf. It was announced that the deal was not going to go through. And then there's been some recent reporting that they may be trying to regroup and try to get Topgolf again. Where do we stand there?
Yeah, so that's actually there just seems to be a little bit more misinformation around what's really the stats of that deal. And on the Topgolf side, yes, agreed.
Todd, not misinformation, right? There's some of that.
Oh, no, that's a whole nother story. right. So, and hey, I mean, I got to lead it off that way just in terms of let's get some clarity, and that's why we wanted to spend some time with you, man.
Exactly.
Here's the key part. That project right now, we did agree to part ways on the existing lease agreement that was in place. Okay. So River District, we're advancing the ball looking at it, all options that we have for that site. Top Golf is one of those entities that has still been remaining pretty dedicated to the New Orleans area. So if they need to put every backstop and mechanism in place as a business to preserve rights to still be in our market, I mean, we still got to support them in that initiative, because there's someone that, as I've seen it, they've been invested quite heavily in the community. So want to still give them their opportunity downstream if they want to look at it. But from our perspective on River District, we have a responsibility to our partners at the convention center and everybody in New Orleans to get something in commerce at that site. So that's where we're focused, with some new opportunities, especially with outdoor amusement.
Yeah, there's a lot of obviously complementary type of facilities that you could have on that piece of property to this entire River District, right?
Oh, yeah. I mean, you're hearing a whole host of options coming to the site. One of the best things that we have coming forward right now is the Heritage Museum that's being considered at the corner of Convention Center in Henderson, where those guys have gotten some supplemental funding from the state in this last legislative cycle. So really looking at how that will help out the development and create a new anchor component for the site. We're continuing conversations around a shared use stadium with the potential of a minor league soccer coming back to our area. There's so many different uses that we could really look at and tie this into the mix. We do have a boutique hotel that's looking to locate right next door to the Shell office building, as well as some other corporate tenants that are really starting to get and follow the buzz around what we have going on at our site.
It's actually really a great location. My daughter lives just a few blocks from there in the Warehouse District, and we're down there a lot, you know, dining with her. And there's just so many things to do in that adjacent neighborhood right there. I think it's going to be completely complementary to one another, that will create a synergy and a lot more excitement in that area.
Oh yeah, and I gotta highlight something. Both Mike and I, when we came to New Orleans after a school of work, sought a professional career, I actually lived in River Gardens right after mm-hmm. Katrina. So I've always had an affection of how that neighborhood was able to bring so many young people in and provide a space that we could basically enjoy and be a part of that neighborhood. Look, I might be back in Gentilly where I grew up at, but I still spend a lot of my time back in that neighborhood. So why not figure out some other uses that help to expand on what that area has always been able to provide for folks to enjoy?
I have a lot of friends whose kids live there. They love it. They love the access, yeah. You know, to the quarter, to the Warehouse District, you know, biking here, going there. They truly enjoy it. So I'm really excited about this. Michael and I were talking about one of the words in the English language being overused is transformational. But this, like the Dome was, I think, is one for this city in a big, big way. Michael Meredith, Todd James, thank you so much for joining us. Truly appreciate it. Best of luck in all the endeavors out there at the River District neighborhood. Appreciate your time.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Thank you, gentlemen.
You guys. We'll be right back with Michael Heck's final thoughts. Stay with us.
Calling all benders and non-benders alike. Dive into the epic world of Avatar with your favorite podcast, Avatar, Braving the Elements.
Hosted by me, Janet Varney, the voice of Avatar Korra.
And me, Dante Bosco, the voice of Prince Zuko.
Each week, we'll explore a new episode of The Legend of Korra.
Find your balance as we uncover breaking news, trivia, special guests, and so much more.
I mean, I've got some flameo hot takes that'll really light a spark. Follow and listen to Avatar Braving the Elements on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back, folks. We're visiting with Michael Heck, President and CEO of G&O Inc. You know, Michael, it's really exciting to hear how much they've accomplished. And then when they tell me that they lost 78 days because of the height of the river, that's 2.5 months. I mean, that's like forever in the construction industry. I mean, that's, you know, you kind of wonder how much further along would they be if they had those 2.5 months back.
Yeah, that's right. But, you know, that's just like the nature of any of these big projects. You're going to have these events, these black or like gray swan events, and it's a question of, you know, creativity and perseverance. It's always like that. And, you know, what's good about this team is that with Michael and Todd and Luis Larcella and Tara and the whole team, they're all local, or they're mostly local, and so they're very dedicated. And that type of dedication literally to the soil is sometimes what it takes. And so we're going to keep supporting them, keep working with all the various stakeholders, the neighborhood, the convention center. And I think this is going to be one of these things like the Superdome that, you know, 10, 20 years after it's done, it'll be unimaginable that it was ever just a bunch of empty fields on some of the most valuable real estate in the country.
And, it just makes our convention center that much more attractive, right? I mean, in the next hour, I'm going to be visiting with Jeremy Cooker about what New Orleans and Company, what it takes to market and develop the strategy around, you know, getting people to come here and you know, an in-depth conversation connecting the dots, because this is a fiercely competitive arena, right?
Yeah, no, it's a brutal market, and in all of these things, the Super Bowl, the conventions, we're always trying to punch way above our weight, and so we have to offer something different in terms of the experience, in terms of the density, in terms of the value, in terms of the customer service, because a Vegas or an LA, they're always going to be able to outspend us, and so we have to rely more on our copious wit.
Michael, let's pivot just real quick because I want to get this in and I'll hold over the two other topics for next week.
Sure.
Nunez Community College announcing that it will procure a liquefied natural gas hands-on training unit, which is really important because LNG is something that looks like we are going to be heavily invested in here. Venture Global now in phase two over there in Plaquemines, which is great news.
The LNG expansion or the LNG investment and expansion in Louisiana is literally like nothing we've ever seen before. It's at a totally different magnitude. The key, though, is that we are then able to train and connect local Louisianians to these jobs, which are really high-paying jobs. I think the ones in Plaquemines are close to $100,000 on average. And so programs that are going through Nunez and through our LCTCS schools are absolutely critical, because if we don't create those pathways for our local residents, then we're just being colonized. Then we're just like an oil and gas company plopping down somewhere and bringing in all their own people and then leaving. That's a bad outcome. But if we can access these jobs for our locals, then we're creating economic mobility, middle class stability. And the LCTCS schools, I was talking to Monty Sullivan yesterday, are the linchpin here. They are the answer. So I'm glad that Tina Tenney's doing this with Nunez. They're also working with us on developing a maritime training program for the new port that we're building in St. Bernard and all across the LCTCS system, Delgado, River Parish Community College. They are the pathway for prosperity, which sounds cliche, but I think it's pretty accurate.
And it's important that we leverage that, as you pointed out, because I think a lot of things are falling in place internationally, right?
We're the prime supplier. Over 60% of our nation's LNG is flowing through Louisiana now, and we are supplying Europe because they're trying to get off of the Russian war machine. So this is big boy stuff, and we are right in the middle of it, and so I'm glad that we're moving aggressively to take advantage of it.
As always, truly enjoy the conversation. We'll see you in that red dress on set. If you do it, I'll do it. How about that?
All right, I'm y'all, the millions of listeners just heard it. Okay, here's the thing: when Newell and I are in a red dress, it's like an eclipse. Just don't look directly; it could burn your eyes.
Yeah. Wear the special glasses. Thank you so much again, Michael. I always enjoy the conversation. Have a great week.
You too, Newell. Thanks, man. Bye bye.
All right, we'll be right back, folks.
Calling all benders and non-benders alike. Dive into the epic world of Avatar with your favorite podcast, Avatar, Braving the Elements.
Hosted by me, Janet Varney, the voice of Avatar Korra.
And me, Dante Bosco, the voice of Prince Zuko.
Each week, we'll explore a new episode of The Legend of Korra.
Find your balance as we uncover breaking news, trivia, special guests, and so much more.
I mean, I've got some flameo hot takes that'll really light a spark. Follow and listen to Avatar Braving the Elements on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.